Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody, on this college basketball championship, no, college football championship evening. We're talking college basketball. This is our Hoops HD report. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined by David Griggs.
In a second, yeah.
Just moved down there on my screen. I don't know how we did that. John Titel, and from Bracketeer.org, Rocco Miller, who passed up a chance to be at the college football championship game to be here tonight, right?
I did, yes, and I'm happy to be here.
I love your priorities.
Yeah, so I also passed up a chance to be there. Well, I mean, I was barred from attending.
This is the show where we review all of the news and notes in all of the major conferences. We'll look at standings, we'll preview upcoming games, and we'll deal with whatever the puppet throws at us, I think, correct?
Yeah, anything and everything. Okay. And the dark web conspiracy continues. We'll get to that when we discuss the Big Ten.
We'll see about that. But I'll tell you what, let me start by throwing up some standings here. We'll start talking about these games that have happened and what's coming up. And hopefully it worked. And let's get right into it with the Big 12, which saw John Titel. Let me start off with you. Ooh. We saw a bit of a blowout on Saturday that we did not expect, I think, in this conference.
I think that is very accurate. The Cyclones had a little Hilton magic ready for the Jayhawks, and they destroyed them on Saturday and should be ranked, I think, not like top 15 or anything, but they're certainly having a great season. Only two losses so far to my Wildcats in Maui and at the in-state rival Hawkeyes. When you beat one of the best teams in the country by 17 points, even without Udoka Azubuike with his injury that unfortunately is going to be out for the year, we learned the other day. Huge win, but they're only top 50 wins so far. So certainly top on the resume, but they need to buttress that a little more. The key is that they're finally have a full roster. There's health and there's no suspension. So they finally got everybody on the same page. After that win, they have to follow it up with a couple of small games and a huge game at Texas Tech on January 16th, which I still think Kansas is the team to beat and is going to win the Big 12 because they always do, but the winner of that game is going to be a strong contender.
Well, let me throw this question. Rocco, you asked this, I think, in an email earlier today, and I want to throw this question directly to you. Kansas without Azubuike now, already having lost badly at Iowa State, is this the year?
Well, I think in any of the last two or three years, maybe even four, if this happened during those seasons, it would be almost a guarantee that they wouldn't be able to win the league without him because they've shown some flaws even with him in. But with this year's Big 12, you know, there's a lot of inconsistency across the board. I think, like Titel pointed out, Texas Tech has been by far the most consistent, but they're not dominant at this point. At least they haven't proved it against Big 12 level caliber. Their biggest test was Duke, and they fell short. So the reigns we've seen there, I think TCU, when Jalen Fisher's healthy, is a definite threat. I think when Texas is playing like good Texas and not bad Texas, they're a threat. But I don't know if they're consistent enough to do it. And then the team I have been the most impressed with is Oklahoma. I do think they're consistent, but I don't know how high their ceiling is. So when you look at it from that landscape and with Kansas State dealing with the Dean Wade injury, you can't just go out and say this team's going to finish higher than Kansas even without Azubuike. It remains to be seen, but there are a good two or three that could do it. And I just don't know who or if it will happen.
Yeah. Oh. David, I was going to ask about, Oklahoma, look at that 1-2 in strength. The schedule for Kansas, Oklahoma, the old RPI formula, they'd be 1-2. The new net formula, they're 16 and 18 in the nation. But Oklahoma numbers are right there with Kansas in terms of metrics, at least, aren't they?
They are, and they're looking the part. It was a little bit underwhelming this weekend at home against a really weak Okie State team. I mean, I know it's the Bedlam rivalry, and that may have been a bit of an equalizer, but they really – the way that they had played certainly at Kansas, you would have expected them to blow them out. And Oklahoma, more often than not, has answered the bell. I think they're – like Rocco, I don't know what their ceiling is, but I like to think that it's pretty high. But they aren't always going to play up to it, and they haven't. Even in some of those wins, they kind of had to sweat out some weaker teams. But if you're looking at deep tracks here, TCU, they started off the season ranked, and they're 12-1. and they haven't really gotten back in there yet. And it's just kind of odd how many teams begin the season ranked in the teams, win 12 of their first 13 games, and are not in the rankings historically. I wish Stolica was here. He would know the answer. But, it just seems kind of odd that everybody kind of forgot about TCU, and they've done some good things. They had the win at SMU. They had the win out at
That's why I'm taking issue with you, David. That's why I pulled the TCU team sheet up. And I know they've got a great overall record, and their strength of schedule for some reason is solid, but they have not been anybody that I think is an NCAA tournament team other than maybe Indiana State, which is, you're a very weak Missouri Valley Conference team.
Yeah, but I'm starting to think that maybe we've kind of – I see your point, Chad, but my only point is that I think that maybe we've forgotten about them a little bit. And while they don't have those big wins yet, when they have won 12 out of 13, and there's reason to believe that they're good enough to at least get some of them.
Well, I'll tell you what, I think that's a good segue into the upcoming schedule here, because this is the week we're going to find out a lot about TCU. Rocco, at Kansas and at Oklahoma this week.
We will, and if Fisher doesn't play, I don't like their chances in either matchup. If Fisher went down in the Lipscomb game early on, I'm sorry, he tried to come back and it didn't work out, and then he's played through that injury. They won every time, even with not 100% Jalen Fisher. They went, it looks like 8-0, maybe 9-0, all the way through the Indiana State game in the tournament when they won the Rainbow Classic. But then he got injured again during practices leading up to the Baylor game and didn't play the other day. And despite them getting that win, they were, if you're following a lot of the advanced metrics, their metrics were down again like they were earlier in the year when they didn't have him. And so, that's definitely, I think, it makes TCU play at a much higher level with him on the court. And I think that's really the key to their success long term. And clearly, if he's out this week, I certainly wouldn't pick them to win in either of those matchups.
Right. And there's a lot of other interesting games coming up this week. Titel, Texas Tech with an interesting week, for example, hosting Oklahoma, and then at a Texas team that's playing pretty well right now, too.
Huge week. I'm glad you mentioned it, because as you see in the strength of schedule column, the good news for Texas Tech, the number one defensive efficient team in the nation. Bad news, the 122 strength of schedule, second worst in the conference. It's going to go way up this week. If they sweep, then I think that Kansas should be heavily on notice.
I guess, David, one last question. We've mentioned them a few times here. West Virginia, is it time to just forget about the team for this year?
Until now, I mean, they haven't done a thing, not anything that indicates that they're really an NCAA tournament team, maybe not even an NIT team.
I'll tell you, David, the one number I look at that adjusted, that defensive efficiency. They're the worst defensive team in the Big 12.
Yeah, and defense has kind of been their lifeblood in recent years. I mean, the opportunities are still there. Certainly if they win 12 of their next 14, we're going to be favoring them pretty heavily, but I don't think they have it in them to do that. And are they going to finish 4 below .500, 6 below .500? I mean, are they going to finish 9th in the conference ahead of just Oklahoma State? I mean, they look pretty bad. I did have another team that I wanted to talk about, and you had mentioned K-State coming in, that even though they only had the two losses, that you were kind of disappointed in them. I take it, Chad, I don't want to put words in your mouth, they did nothing this week to change your opinion of that.
No, well, obviously they're dealing with the injuries, but at this point, there's nothing to tell me that Kansas State's even an NCAA tournament team. At this point, it's still early in the season, but they got a lot of time. They've got this week, they're hosting West Virginia, which now they should be able to win. I don't think they have a game this coming up over the weekend. Oh no, they're at Iowa State then after that. So they got a tough test coming up on Saturday. Yeah. All right, let's jump back over to the ACC and, Rocco, let me start with you. I put together a bracket over the weekend, the first time I've put together a bracket since the preseason, and I ended up with not 5, but 6 ACC teams among my top 16, which would be unprecedented. That's never happened. But if you look at the ratings right now, that's what they've got, isn't it?
Yeah, probably. I haven't myself. I know you and Titel have already done it. I haven't done the full exercise. I'm saving that for next weekend, but on the surface here, it does look that way. Clearly, Virginia has a case to be made for the number one overall. Duke does as well. So there's two number one seeds right off the bat. North Carolina's got a solid enough resume to be a protected seed, as does NC State and Virginia Tech. So That's five and right there.
Florida
And Florida State, yeah. So Florida State got waxed the other day, but losing to Virginia, that's no harm, no foul for them. So yeah, you could easily put them in protected seed range at this point.
Right. Tytel, how about this Vatek team at the top there, though? I know you have some comments on them.
It's really an amazing performance by our good friend Buzz, because this is a team.
Oh, cool, Buzz!
One of their best players last year, Chris Clark, he's been suspended indefinitely after missing most of last year, I believe, with a torn ACL. And right. All this team does is come out and win and win and win. 2-0 in conference play. They lost by one at Penn State in November. They're 1 point away from perfection. They've had a very weak schedule so far besides that. I get that. Huge test, obviously, at Virginia on January 15th. This team has lived and died by the three. So far, they've been living large. 44% from behind the arc, number two in the entire nation.
And David, let me ask you this. We talked about these with Rocco, these six teams that all up there, including that Virginia Tech team. Beyond those six, I kind of see the bubble creeping up at that point in this conference. It's like six, and then there's a huge gap down to maybe your next best team is Louisville, or is it Clemson?
I like this Louisville team. Okay. I think that Louisville's not protected seed, at least not yet, but definitely in the top half of the bracket. I mean, they've beaten Michigan State. None of their losses are even remotely bad, and they have the win against Seton Hall, I think at Seton Hall in a true road game. It's a good profile. And I think that it's in some ways a little bit better than even what Florida State's done. At least there's things on it that are better than what's on Florida State's, if not holistically better.
Well, tell you what, let me throw that Louisville profile here on the left side, and I'll throw Florida State on the right.
The voters don't seem to like them, and it's just really odd that – or not odd, but normally, like, they would be all over a Power 5 team that has the win against Michigan State, who's ranked really high – a win against Seton Hall, who's proven themselves to be pretty good. Tennessee is not a bad loss. Kentucky at home isn't that bad. They barely lost to Indiana, who's in the rankings, and they lost to Marquette in overtime, who's in the rankings. I mean, I just think that they've done a lot. Now, when you look at what's coming up, I think that they're going to win probably four of the next five.
Oh, I think three of the next four. Do you think they beat North Carolina and NC State?
No, I think they beat Pitt, Boston College, Georgia. I said three of the next four. That's what I said.
I think they would.
No, I said three of the next. You got to go back that up.
I'll tell you what, David, though. I will agree with you. Until February, I think that they beat every team that's not from the state of North Carolina that they play.
Well, NC State at home, they beat Michigan State at home. It's not easy to win at Louisville. I'm going to say this, that, I think they will beat NC State in Louisville. Okay. I do.
Let's take a look at the rest of the upcoming schedule here. Rocco, here's the upcoming schedule in the ACC. Should be popping up on the right-hand side there, beginning with North Carolina, NC State tomorrow night.
That should be a great matchup, I think. NC State's only had a couple of tests this year. They've passed them for the most part, but this is especially with them playing second fiddle for North Carolina for so long. It's going to be a rowdy atmosphere. I can only imagine.
Yeah.
It's going to be, it'll be popping. That'll be must watch tomorrow. Also a key game for Syracuse against Clemson the following night. I think Syracuse took some lumps during the non-league and really have to start making up for that. Now they did it. They had a good first step by winning at Notre Dame over the weekend here.
Yeah, and how about this game on Saturday, Tytel? Duke is at Florida State.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Virginia might have shown Florida State's true colors. It'll be fun to see Zion try to dunk on 7'4" and Chris Pumaje just for the sheer optics of it. But I think Duke will have an easy time of it. What's interesting, how about the University of Clemson this week? Tonight they got to face Alabama. Saturday they got to face Tony Bennett in Virginia. Talk about a tough week.
Yeah.
And go to the Carrier Dome, too.
And trip to the Carrier Dome in between, yep. Let's jump over to the Big East here. Should be coming up on the screen. There it is. And, David, let me start with you with the upset from Sunday that you know, we were praising Seton Hall last week, and then they go to DePaul, and
Yeah. And they trailed for most of that game. They fought their way back in it and had a chance to win, but couldn't get it done. And the thing is, DePaul, while improved, is still not going to be in the NIT, chances are. That's a road game that a tournament team, at least a first ballot team, much less one that was as good as we thought Seton Hall was, should be expected to win. Now, Seton Hall will get their scalps. I think it was a setback, not a killer. But, yeah, a rather discouraging loss there. For a league that doesn't really have anybody that's, with the exception of maybe the Johnnies and really not even them, that's done a whole lot of high national significance. I saw your bracket today. What was the highest seed line you had anybody on?
I think that I'm sure it was Marquette. I can't remember the seed line off the top of my head.
I don't think you had them as a protected seed, or if you did, they were on the four line. Yeah. They were close. And do you happen to remember, Tytel, where you had – it's not where we're used to seeing the top of this league land on the seed list. Is that a fair assessment?
Where I had which team?
Well, anybody, like the highest you had anybody from this
country. The Big East, I think I have Marquette as a six as my highest, and then just below them, Villanova 7, Seton Hall 8, St. John's 8.
Yeah, and not to beat up on the Big East, everybody has down years. When was the last at no point in this current format have they not had someone in a protected seed range? That's a little bit historically bad, and certainly going back to the old classic Big East lineup, that was never the case.
Actually, David, I just double-checked my bracket. My highest-rated team was actually St. John's, and Tytel, that's the team I wanted to ask you about. I know you got a chance to go and see their win at Georgetown, coming off of that, what they did to Marquette the week before.
I did. I just posted it a couple hours ago, in case anybody wants to read it. Shamori Pons, I really thought, hometown bias, that Jesse Govan was going to be Big East Player of the Year. Now, with apologies to Marcus Howard, who's certainly in the running, I think it's Shamori Pons. The past two games, 26 against Marquette, beating them by 20, and then 37 on the road to beat Georgetown in overtime by 3, almost single-handedly. It was a team effort, but he's just unstoppable. He makes threes. He made 4 threes against Marquette, 6 against Georgetown, combined 6 steals over the past two games. He does it on both ends of the court. He makes behind-the-back passes, but not for show. Like, he puts them on the money. He really is the best player in the Big East. And the thing is, St. John should have lost the game. They were down 2, and Georgetown had the ball with 15 seconds left in the second half. And then Georgetown blew it, and St. John's pulled away in overtime with Georgetown missing 2 starters. That being said, they're also 2 points away from perfection. The Seton Hall loss on the road December 29th by 2 points. Mullen certainly has the team going in the right direction. I think they're going to be a top 8 seed. I don't know if they're going to get to a top 4 seed, but they get a lot of athletes and not a lot of size, but they can all dunk. They can all hustle on defense, so they're not going to be fun to play against in March.
Yeah, you should have listened to me in the preseason when I told you he'd be the player of the year. But okay, David, go ahead.
Well, just again, a real impressive job that Mullen's done. When he got there, they were a big mess, and this has been a long work in progress for a guy that didn't have a whole lot of experience coming in. I did want to ask Tytel, in your coverage of the game, how interesting it would have been if suddenly they permitted the coaches to play. You'd have had Mullen and Ewing. I think that would have been kind of fun.
It would, although it's weird. Like, they're almost a reflection of their best players in terms of Georgetown's best guy is Govan, like a big center, although he can shoot from the perimeter like Patrick could. And then Pons, obviously, he's more of a point guard, and Mullen was more of a shooting guard, but they can both drain threes. So they actually remind me, the coaches remind me of their best players.
Yeah. And I got to admit, I think we were kind of riding Georgetown pretty hard last year, but they're much improved this year. Patrick Ewing, another coach that had not – had any head coaching experience anyway, doing a really nice job at Georgetown.
Rocco, I've actually got that St. John's profile up on the left, but on the right side of the screen up there, I threw up another team here, Creighton, that we have not really discussed much this season.
Oh, look at the profile!
Well, but you look in the bad side, and they have 5 losses, they don't have any bad losses.
Yeah, I think so far Creighton's in okay shape, especially with the road win at Providence. The interesting thing about the Big East this year, and you guys have alluded to, is the top is definitely lowered in standard and quality, but the bottom has really come up with DePaul and Georgetown improving. Regardless of where DePaul finishes, they're capable of beating almost every team with a good night, and I think we can all agree on that. They've blown a lot of big leads this year, and even in their losses. And so it's going to be really interesting to see how it shakes out, because I think it, with all the games still to be played, there's a little bit of ceiling left for teams like St. John's and Creighton and Marquette even, and even Villanova, but there's also a long way to fall if they slip up along the way. So, I think there's probably four or five bids in there as we speak right now, but it's really going to be interesting to see how this plays out as teams beat up on each other, because I think any given night, anybody can beat anybody in this league.
Right. David, I'll put the upcoming schedule. What are you circling here? I guess starting with tomorrow night's game, you definitely circle that one. But
yeah, Johnny's Nova for sure. Butler has kind of hit the skids, although they had kind of a bounce back game. Just about all of them, because like you said, one of the things I wanted to ask both of our bracket experts, although I think we've kind of answered it already, do you see a protected seed in this conference? And maybe you do, but maybe you don't, but you see potentially five or six bids. So with it being so balanced, it's like every game has something at stake. You could say Marquette at Creighton, that's a big road game for Marquette, and it's the kind of resume game that Creighton needs. Well, Georgetown and Xavier is kind of blah. But Seton Hall Marquette, another big game. Providence at Georgetown, another big game. So we're going to see
Creighton.
Yeah, stakes games. Just about all of them. I mean, which ones would I circle? The ones in that column.
Okay.
Yeah, Creighton's got to protect home court this week. And then, really, I think three teams could still get in a protected seed range. Certainly St. John's, certainly Villanova, and I think Marquette as well are still very capable to get up in that top four seed range.
I think to do that, though, they've really got to, you know, win this conference by a couple games. One of them has to pull away from the rest.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Okay. Let's jump over to the Big Ten here. Tytel, let me go back to you on the Big Ten, where we saw a nice week for Maryland, among other teams.
Surprisingly so. I have been unimpressed by them this year, but they're really starting. They're a young team, a lot of freshmen, including three in the starting lineup to go with Bruno Fernando at the four and Anthony Cowan at the point. But they've only lost three games. Impressive, the three they've lost to, Virginia, Purdue, Seton Hall, all solid guys in the tournament right there. And by a total of 11 points, they're not getting blown out even by the best teams in the country. A huge win over a good friend, Tim Miles, last Wednesday at home. A brutal schedule coming up, though. Five straight games in the next 14 days, each against top 50 opponents. So I think they should be able to navigate those waters. But if they go 1-4, then they are going to be sinking instead of swimming.
And Rocco, how about the top two teams here, both in the state of Michigan? I think Michigan State, very impressive with their win at Ohio State over the weekend.
I agree. And they were trailing early, and they really overcame a deficit there and a tight game in the second half and just really pulled away at the end. Really impressed by that result. I think that's going to do them wonders at the end of the year if Ohio State stays where they are, of course. But Michigan as well, that's a team I got to see crush North Carolina. They've been suffocating at home the way that they just have a balanced roster with Iggy coming in as a crazy impact freshman to go along with Jordan Poole and Matthews and a lot of the guys back from last year. I think that's the best team I've seen play this year as a team. And really, really easy to root for, actually. I mean, just as a kind of unbiased observer of that team. So I think Michigan State both have the ability to land on the one line at the end of the year, which would be a good representation of how great this league has been so far.
Well, and yet, David, if you look here in the net ratings, each of the top 10 teams in that list, they're all in the top 40 of the net. They're all 10 of those are receiving votes in at least one of the two polls. When I did my bracket last night, I had 10 Big Ten teams in there. Is that possible this year?
Probably. I suppose it's possible. It would take things would have to play out in kind of a specific way. I don't think you're going to see all 10 make it. There are problems like
Nebraska.
Well, Nebraska can't win away from home because of the dark web conspiracy. It's just one of those things that's going to work against them. Again, they just can't beat teams at home or away from home. And the committee overvalued. Why can't I finish my thought here?
Tytel, I don't know how many teams you had when you did your from the Big Ten, but you know, do you think that's a possibility here? Could we see that many teams out of this conference?
I don't think we're getting 10 Big Ten teams. Okay. You can make an argument for 10 of them. And certainly I think the top five or so are near locked, although, like I said, if Maryland starts fading, then not. I don't believe in Minnesota. I don't believe in Iowa yet. So I think I'm setting the over-under at, like, 8. But you can talk your way into 10. I don't think it's going to happen.
Well, Rocco, let me pick up that profile for that Minnesota team you just mentioned, because real nice win this week at Wisconsin, last week at Wisconsin. They also have the win over Nebraska. I hate to say it, but because I've never been a big fan of their head coach there, but they kind of put together a profile, aren't they?
They are, yeah. And I thought the win over Wisconsin on the road was absolutely huge, because for everything we can tell so far, Wisconsin does look like a solid tournament team. They haven't really had a letdown like that, especially at home. So that will really stand out on their resume if things continue this way for the next 2 months, big if. Also, hopefully that Washington win will be because Washington handed them that game. The BC loss, you know, that doesn't look as pretty, but at least it's on the road. They can overcome it. The problem with the league as a whole, and Minnesota will probably be caught up in the mess in the middle, is, you know, with 10 teams deserving to get in today, which I agree with you guys on, as time goes on with only 14 teams total in the league, the sheer mathematics of it is somebody's got to lose every time out. And eventually, they're going to end up with some sub 500 teams on the bubble. And, you know, then it's just going to come down to which those teams are and if they did enough in non-conference. And so it's really hard to predict at this point, but I think anywhere from 7 to 10 is fair, but it's really hard to, they almost need a perfect storm to get all 10 in.
And that's where a team like Purdue better watch out with those 4 non-conference losses, even though their metrics and their numbers are all that good. Going to be a tough number of it's going to be tough to get a solid enough overall record to justify unless they really do well in conference play.
I'm not a believer in Iowa, and there's another team I don't believe in, but I better not say because of the dark
one. Here's the upcoming schedule. What are you looking forward to this week? Like, we just circle almost all the games there as well.
Yeah, but put 2 circles around Purdue Tuesday at Sparty. And then Friday at Badgers, I don't think they're sweeping this week, but even if they get 1 or 2, that'll be a very good week for the Boilers.
There seems to be a lot of Friday Big Ten games this year coming up in the season, so that'll be nice for those of us that like that are
last year, the new TV deal. They wanted a game on in Friday night primetime for some reason. So, but yeah, we get 2 this year. It was just 1 last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of doubleheaders coming up on these Friday nights. So
yeah, so I guess they changed it. Okay.
SEC time, and we know Tytel, we know that Alabama's got a football game tonight, but how about their basketball team who did something over the weekend that was pretty nice too?
Hell of a January. Happy New Year to the Tide. Great win against Kentucky, albeit by 2, and albeit they almost lost it. When Tyler Harrow, the freshman for Kentucky, put up a 3 at the buzzer, I thought it was going in. It was close. He didn't make it. And they just let Kentucky back into that game with some bad, young, silly play. But a win's a win. And this is something that they can put high on their resume. 10-3 so far looks pretty solid to me. And the fact that they're only 2 losses since mid-November by a combined 10 points. They got a solid big man, Dante Hall, 3 straight double-doubles. They're beating top 75 teams by single digits, albeit, but they're winning. And the funny thing is they still have 4 fewer wins than their football team.
Rocco, on the other end of things here, Florida suffers a home loss to South Carolina. Is there big cause for concern for the Gators at this point?
There is, yeah, because they came in with some ugly losses during preseason. I'm just pulling up what they got here.
We can put on the screen here, yeah.
Yeah, where they didn't really lose to bad teams. I think Florida State, Oklahoma, Butler, and Michigan State are all tournament caliber or well into the tournament. But they had that game to start the year at Florida State where they got destroyed. I think they've had some close calls where they squeaked out games throughout the year. So the fact that South Carolina is even hanging with them when the game is in Gainesville is a cause for concern by itself. I'm not sure if you guys saw the clip on how it ended on a home run pass where the ball just went over everybody's outstretched hands and right into
it's pathetic.
Yeah, it was a wide open low with 1 second to go to win the game. So, you know, this is typical Florida, though. I think last year they lost about, what, three or four games they shouldn't have, and then won three or four they shouldn't have, and in the end they ended up on the sixth line. So we'll see where we end up.
That was Chris Silva with that dunk to win the game for South Carolina. But David, how about the other end of the SEC? I put them on the right side there. Tennessee just continuing to look really, really good, aren't they?
Really good. One seed caliber good. Final four caliber good. Just amazingly good. One loss to a full-strength Kansas team in overtime in a game where they led for much of the second half and had every chance in the world to win it. Maybe arguably should have won it. And you know, they have the win over Gonzaga. That was kind of exciting. But I want to draw attention to something else. I mean, they've played a tough schedule, and they've won against it rather handily.
Well, and if you look at the upcoming schedule, I'm having trouble finding a loss until, like, the middle of February.
I mean, it's all winnable. And this team has won. They haven't played that many true road games. But, you know, they went to Memphis and – It was an intense atmosphere. I know Memphis isn't the best team, but they were up, I think, 25-5 or something like that. I mean, it's as if they were up by 15 points at the tip. So, I mean, to me, that's a sign that they're certainly capable of going to Mizzou and going to Florida and going to Vandy and not only winning, but winning rather handily. And who's going to beat them? Is the next game where they're even going to sweat that Kentucky game?
Kentucky, they don't play Auburn until the final game of the season there at Tytel, where are the losses here?
There's not many. They should be favored in their next dozen or so. At Kentucky, February 16th is a coin flip, I would guess. And then the last game of the season at Auburn. They could win out, but I'm sure they'll stumble at some point. What's nice is that when you get the SEC Big 12 Challenge, of all the years to have West Virginia, they get lucky, and this is the year they have West Virginia.
Well, they get lucky, or maybe they don't get lucky because they're not going to get another quality opponent, especially given that it's a home game. I would much rather see them playing almost any Big 12 team other than that.
Right, which raises the question, should they do what the old bracket buster did and not match them up until 2 weeks prior to the event? I
kind of like that idea. Rocco, I want to bring up one other team here in this conference before we move on, and that's Kermit Davis's team there.
I wanted to ask about them.
I am so glad that you brought that up, and I was also so glad that you put them in your bracket today. Ole Miss, they haven't proven a lot yet, to be honest, but what they've done is all they've done is lost to Butler on the road in Cincinnati in a tournament on a neutral court. Outside of that, they've got some good wins. They just kicked off SEC play with a 10-point road win at injury-plagued Vanderbilt. But what they're doing is they're taking care of business every time they're out there. If you look at their results, San Diego's a good win. Baylor's a good win. And so they're showing signs that they can hang at least with the middle of the SEC. And like we talked about, I'm just thinking back to our preseason episode. There was going to be somebody that we weren't expecting to emerge because so many teams had so many injuries to deal with to make up for like a Missouri or for a Vandy. So Kermit Davis, with his coaching pedigree and with some veterans that he was able to maintain from last year, I would not be surprised if they hang around all year long in the tournament talk, at least sort of like Mike Hopkins in Washington last year until the very end. This could be a good story brewing.
Yeah, a tough schedule coming up here. Auburn at home at Mississippi State. So we're going to learn a lot about this Ole Miss team the next couple weeks. I think they got LSU coming up after that.
Yep. Well, I don't know. We can't see. Okay, we can see.
There it is right there. Tytel, here's our upcoming schedule. Are we circling most of these games here? It's maybe that Alabama-LSU game beginning tomorrow night.
Oh, that's a good one.
You have to wonder if there's any time for Florida to rally after losing. It is this Saturday when they host Tennessee. I think they'll certainly be up for it. I don't think they'll get it done because Tennessee does seem for real, like David was saying. The big game, Auburn going to Ole Miss, and then Ole Miss going to their in-state rival Mississippi State the following week, which I am not a historian. Excuse me, on Saturday. I'm not a historian of basketball in Mississippi. I don't think there is much. So I would say that this is going to be one of the bigger Mississippi State games ever, maybe.
They've had some big ones, but yeah, it's one of the bigger ones I can recall. If Tytel or if Stalika was here, he's an expert on basketball in Mississippi. He'd be able to tell us the last time there was one this big.
And Tytel's got a phone call, I think. So let's
answer that. Can we put him on speaker?
Did they give him like half an egg bowl for winning the first leg?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, let's move on to another conference that is going to probably have multiple teams in this tournament. That's the American, before we get on to the single bid conferences that we're going to be discussing.
Before we get on to the what should be under the radar conference.
David, Houston is now 15-0. They took care of Tulsa and Memphis at home this week.
Yeah, and they were at home, and those are games that you would expect a team that's ranked as high as they are to win easily. Well, they won easily. So I think that they're at least living up to what their ranking is, and we'll see how much higher they go. UCF with a nice weekend. I still think that they're kind of on the fringe of the bubble. I saw that you had them around the 10 or 11 line, so in that range of in the bracket but not in the top half, inside the bubble but still in the bottom half of it. We were talking about Houston. Sorry.
Yeah, we're talking about Houston. Well, Ty, let me bring you back into the, he mentioned UCF here. They picked up a road win at UConn, the home win over Temple. You know, this team, are you starting to believe in them?
I am. Another one of these favorite kind of teams where I like, where they're this close to perfection. They've lost two games by a combined 3 points. Well, the thing that's going to bite them is in the butt. They're a terrible free throw shooting team, 63%. Somehow, their opponents are even worse, 59%. I hope they don't get into any free throw shooting contests because nobody should have to watch that. A great veteran starting lineup, three seniors and two juniors. If they win their next six in a row, which they are favored to do, we could have a hell of a game on February 7th, 1 month from tonight. 18-2 UCF hosting an undefeated 22-0 Houston team, dare to dream. And the key, tackle Folley, the 7'6 man in the middle, he dunks and makes layups all the time, 80% from the field. Foul him, foul him, foul him. He makes less than 28% from the free throw line, but he's also so valuable on defense, over three blocks a game. Nobody against UCF can make any shots in the paint. That's why they're winning games.
Rocco, let me ask you about the team that I pulled up on the right there. I don't remember Cincinnati giving up 73 points in a game in the last 10 years, and let alone to do it at East Carolina in a loss.
It was a tough loss, and it was a good game throughout. It just made me think, besides Tulane maybe, who actually beat South Dakota State, how much better the bottom of the AAAC has become this year versus last year and the year before. At least East Carolina is putting up a fight against some of the higher tiered teams in the league, as well as a team you're probably going to get to, South Florida, who's been very impressive the last 2 weeks. I don't know. I guess maybe I'm just a half-empty outlook guy on this stuff, because when I see the bottom of the league teams playing them that well on their home court, I think that's good for the league. Maybe it's not good for them getting bids, but it's really good basketball to watch when a team like ECU can make Cincinnati sweat.
Oh, well, they beat Cincinnati. I I'm concerned with the Cincinnati as an NCAA tournament team now with that loss. I'm not certain that they're – because they're not going to have that many more chances in conference.
Yeah, they don't have a lot of wins. Yeah.
Right, and I had liked them for most of the year. It's like they lost their opener to Ohio State, but I think we've pretty much decided that Ohio State's pretty good, and they had beaten Xavier, and they'd beaten UCLA, and they'd beaten, like, UNLV and done all this stuff. But, like, as things have sort of progressed – Xavier stinks and UCLA stinks and UNLV really stinks. So those wins seem to have lost some of their glitter. When you look at them, they just aren't as good as we thought they were at the time. And you couple that with them going on the road and losing to East Carolina, who stinks, you start to wonder, are they like a solid tournament team? I still think Cincinnati is going to get there, but they really need to hit the gas and they really need to string together these wins. Like, they have a Tulsa team who's probably NIT-ish, and they have a Connecticut team and South Florida team that are improved. They basically, when you look at, they need to win five of their next six, I think.
They may need to win six out of their next six. I don't think there's, besides these three teams we just discussed, is there anybody even worth discussing in this conference at this point?
Depending on your time into Fran Dunphy as always, but other than that, just waiting to see when Houston's going to lose, if they're going to lose.
Yeah,
I did kind of want to throw them out there, Chad, just to get everybody's thoughts on Temple.
Well, Tytel, your thoughts on Temple?
I think they're arguably the best team in Philly, although you could also argue they're like the fourth best team in Philly just because a bunch of good losses in the top quadrant. Look at UCF being a higher quality loss than Villanova. Unbelievable.
Well, it depends on which Penn team shows up on any given night, right?
Dang. Obviously, most of the meat on their bones are in the lower tiers, but certainly huge game coming up hosting Houston. We'll see if North Philly is kind to the visitors from Texas.
Rocco, I'm going to put the upcoming schedule in the American for this next week on the screen here. I'm not certain that there's anything really worth circling, but if there are, other than the Houston Temple game that we just mentioned.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's not the greatest matchups on paper, but again, I would expect, you know, there could be some sneaky games like South Florida at Temple, especially after Temple playing a big game before that. I'm a little intrigued by the South Florida team that surprised UConn in the opener and then fought Tulsa very tough the other day.
And then lost to Citadel.
And they lost to the Citadel. But yeah, I mean, some of these teams, like especially East Carolina, South Florida, they have such a losing culture coming into this season that they're finally starting to taste some wins. And so I'm really interested to see what that means for the next couple months.
All right. Let's head over to the other surprise game of the weekend here. Tytel, remember you on this, where the Nevada Wolfpack went to the pit in New Mexico, and now suddenly something happened, you know, a little change in defensive philosophy there for New Mexico, and something has clicked, hasn't it?
It was really like one of the more unbelievable results because it was not close. This isn't a New Mexico team that has like one loss. This is a team that lost to my Quakers at home last month by double digits, and then they destroyed Nevada by 27 points. In fairness, the defense was great. When you have a preseason All-American like Caleb Martin come in, he shoots 2 of 14 from the field. Like, sure, maybe that's got to be some good defense or the altitude or the pit or who knows what, but I think that if Nevada plays this team 10 times, they win a lot more than 5 out of 10. Great size by the Lobos. 4 starters, 6'7", or taller. Kind of the opposite of St. John's off the top of my head. And the point guard, the one guy who's not 6'7", Anthony Mathis, amazing free throw shooter and three-point shooter. 42% from behind the arc, 89% from the line. If you foul the guy or give him an open three, he is going to kill you.
Well, if you look at New Mexico, actually, one of the interesting things that I heard about them, the last 4 games, starting with that Penn game, actually, they went from man-to-man to a zone defense. They've been giving up over 80 points a game man-to-man. They've cut 20 points off of that since they switched to the zone. And other than the Penn loss, which is their first game in the zone, they beat a non-D1 team. They won at Air Force, and now they beat Nevada. So, you know, maybe this team actually makes some noise during conference play, too, for all we know.
This is a little preposterous because take that Nevada loss out there, off of that, and that's what their profile looked like going into this game. It was really bad. And look at the scores. My God, they were getting blown off of the planet by teams that really aren't very
good. Look how much points they were giving. They were giving up 80 to 100 points a game, and now they're giving up 60 points a game.
Right. So it was really surprising. And you might recall last year, I couldn't believe I had forgotten this, but I was reminded of it by someone on Twitter. If you're watching and I forgot who you are, I'm sorry. Was Nevada trying to break last year's record of falling down by 25 at the pit and coming back and winning? I mean, was that what they were attempting to do?
Rocco, any cause for concern for the Wolfpack? Or was this just a blip?
Well, I think it just shows what we've kind of assumed but didn't want to believe throughout the non-conference play, which was Nevada is not dominant from start to finish, and they weren't last year either. I mean, if you remember their tournament wins, the Cincinnati game, they were in the hole huge. 22, right, and they made a huge comeback and won. They were in the hole in the first round against Texas. They were in the hole more than 2 or 3 times here in the non-conference. So their style is to just kind of waiting for their chance to strike and wear teams down, and then in this game, it never came, their opportunity. So, yeah, that's. I think they'll probably land somewhere around 15-3, 16-2. But that was my hesitation to ever say they would run through this league. There's a lot of tough road trips in this league. New Mexico being at the top of that list.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, didn't UNLV blow them out by more than 20 in the conference tournament last year in the quarterfinals?
Maybe San
Diego State. I'm sorry. Okay, maybe they just lose a couple games every year by about 20 points. I don't know. Maybe it's just a precondition of theirs.
Well, yeah. There's the upcoming schedule for the Mountain West on the right. There, they are hosting San Jose State in a bye game against a non-D1 team on Wednesday night, and then they're at Fresno State on Saturday, which that could be a bit of a challenge. Although Fresno State dealing with injuries has put up a solid record at least. Mm-hmm. Utah State, I guess, worth half a mention, David. They've got a home game against Fresno and trip to Wyoming.
Yeah, that home game against Fresno is big. They really need to win that one. Well, they really need to win them all.
Let's turn over to the West Coast Conference now, where Gonzaga started out conference play with a fairly easy win against a team that Pac-12 teams can't beat, Tytel, crushing Santa Clara.
It's really been a great job by the Zags. And I don't know if you remember a week or two ago when I talked about Iowa State getting the guys healthy and getting the guys unsuspended. The healthy factor is the key for Gonzaga. When your only two losses are to Tennessee and Phoenix and at the North Carolina Tar Heels, you're doing just fine, obviously, and they are the number one team in the nation in offensive efficiency, as you can see there. But the real key is that they've been doing it shorthanded, and overnight they've become one of the deepest teams in the nation. They get two guys back from injury. Geno Crandall missed 9 games with a fractured right hand. Killian Tilly missed 15 games after ankle surgery. Now that they're healthy and back, they're favored to win not just every game, but every regular season game by 5 or more points. And I think they're going to do that. I know that San Francisco is legit, and I wouldn't sleep on Loyola or San Diego and St. Mary's. That's obviously the big rivalry game in this conference. But I think Gonzaga at full strength is head and shoulders above the rest of this conference.
And BYU always gives them a game too. But sorry, David, go ahead.
Well, I completely agree. They were excellent without those two players. They're even better with them. And you hate to play the what-if game, but if they had both of those guys – do they win one or both of the games that they ended up losing? Now, you can't really look at it that way, or can you? And again, we've got two selection committee guessing experts here. If Gonzaga wins out, which I am actually expecting them to do, what do you do with them? Like, don't you have to kind of put them on the one line?
I think it's going to be more about this. This will be a much different year for Gonzaga, because if you sweep St. Mary's, you sweep San Diego, you sweep San Francisco, and you sweep BYU, those are going to be like 8 or 10 impressive wins, at least the road ones, because all those teams are not outside of the top 100 anymore. They're to me, quality teams that should stay. And so I think if they win out, it's just going to be a matter of how many losses the teams from the big conferences, like your Michigan States and your Tennessees, that's going to be the difference between Gonzaga landing on a 2 or a 1 if they do win out.
Well, Rocco, let me stick with you for a second here. I put that Gonzaga profile coming up right here on the left. But on the right, what about the Dons? A nice home win over St. Mary's. But is there a chance for this team to make it into the field also?
I love the Dons. But I'm just going to say, you know, unfortunately, they couldn't get the big Buffalo win. That was a great game. And then playing down at Santa Barbara is like a place nobody goes during non-league play. They had the guts to do it and unfortunately got bit. But that was another great game. Those are the only two losses. Everything else that's
very coming poor up, broadcast, but a great game.
It was. I actually was only only an hour away, and I was tempted to drive over. I unfortunately couldn't do it. But
that's how bad I was. I was 4 time zones away. The broadcast was so bad, I was tempted to drive over.
If you would have gone, I would have been there. But in all seriousness, I think the San Francisco team's a quality team. In fact, here locally, there's a lot of jokes going around. If San Francisco was in the Pac-12, would they win the league?
Yes.
And that's a fun question to throw out there.
I'll do a quick look at the upcoming schedule here in the West Coast Conference before we move on. And they've got Gonzaga's hosting Pacific. And then they're at the huge game at San Francisco coming up Saturday. Yeah. I mean, circle that game. If San Fran can get that win, I think that we can talk about them.
It's been sold out, Chad, for over 6 weeks. It's the most exciting San Francisco home game since I don't know when. But
Bill Russell.
Saga every
since
year.
Bill Russell.
There we go. Since all of us have been alive.
We've got to do it at some point here, Tytel. I'm gonna switch to it. I've been avoiding it, but the single bid league known as the Pac-12. Your Wildcats are number one on the list there. Your thoughts on this conference and what it's doing at this point?
I mean, the fact that like we had talked about Colorado as like as short as a week or two ago as being like the best team in this conference, and now they're like overnight one of the worst teams in the conference. Arizona lucky to beat 2-0 this week. They had to go to overtime to beat the Utes in Tucson. ASU continues to slide with a split week. Somehow the California schools went 2-0 this week, only because they're playing the Bay Area schools. I don't know if UCLA is going to be able to rebound after firing Alford, but the fact is they're 2 wins. They're 2-0 since firing him on New Year's Eve. They've won each game by 15 points or more, but that's because they've been playing Stanford and Cal. Their next three are on the road. We'll see what they're made of. And much like UCF, another terrible free throw shooting team, 63%, they're going to get bit in the butt if they have a close game.
Well, Rocco, has the door now completely open for your team to win this conference, the Washington Huskies?
Well, first of all, Chad, I want to thank you because I brought my notes for the Mac because I had figured they had passed the Pac-12 for the Hoops HD. they might have a better chance of getting two bids. But I'll go back to your question. So, yes, absolutely. I think Arizona State, Washington, just from the resume standpoint and just visually, look like the three best teams. But, you know, in Washington's defense, they haven't taken the bad loss yet, but they also don't have the standout win. And unfortunately, for Washington State's sake as well, they only play the Arizona schools once each, and those will both be on the road in early February. And so they're going to have to at least split that trip. And then the rest of the year, I mean, they're going to be looked at as a bad loss unless it's on the road and against somebody at least middle of the pack. So that's a lot of pressure to because this league, no matter how strong it is or not, there's some trips that are tough to navigate with the Thursday, Saturday, most of the year format, especially what Washington's facing this week by going to the mountains, which I think is the toughest trip.
Yeah, David, there's the upcoming schedule in the Pac-12. Are you going to watch any of these games?
Probably, but Washington at Utah, maybe. Generally, these games are on late at night when there's not really much else on, so you end up watching them. But I am not looking forward to any of these games.
Let's take a look at one more conference here, the Atlantic 10.
Let's look at this a little bit, yeah.
Okay, David, the Atlantic 10 is there. Actually, Tytel, let me start with you. We've got a team 2-0 now, George Mason. We liked them before the season.
Yes.
And
they've got a hell of a strength and conditioning coach, by the way.
That's your boy, Hamby. Yeah. This is a terrible team. They were 2-5 to start the season, losing at home to my Quakers, for God's sake. But a nice start to conference play, 2-0, a pair of wins of 15 or more points. However, they've been doing this without Jair Greer, one of their best senior players, still out due to a foot injury. I don't know when he's coming back. The schedule is also pathetic. They've not beaten a top 100 team. They get to host one on Wednesday when Davidson comes to town, the defending conference champs. And a very small lineup, unlike some of the taller lineups we've mentioned, nobody in the starting lineup taller than 6'7". So if they have to face a big man, I think they're in trouble. But when you don't play any top 100 teams, you don't have to worry about that, I guess.
I'll tell you that last week there were four teams I was probably looking at with a shot to win this. George Mason was not one of them. I was looking at St. Louis, VCU, Dayton. St. Joe's was the other one. Rocco, they had not only losing to George Mason, but then losing at home to George Washington. I'm done with Phil Martelli's squad at this point. But who is the best team in this conference at this point?
Yeah, I think there's three that stand out, being VCU, St. Louis, and Dayton. But just from watching the VCU-Virginia game and seeing what VCU's been doing to other competition, I think VCU's the clear favorite right now in my book.
I would have to agree with that. And I think as bad as this league is, I think that if one of those three, and maybe four, if Davidson somehow gets it together, but if SLU, VCU, or Dayton runs away from the conference, and in I think it's a 16-team format, or is it 18 now? Like, if they go 16-2, 15-3, 18. I think that that's going to be good enough to get them onto the 10 or 11.
And so you think it could be a two-bit league if they get upset in the conference tournament then?
I do. Now, again, there is almost no margin for error, and they do have to run away from the league. And they can't lose to anybody bad, and they have to beat some of the teams that are good. But I think it's possible.
I'll tell you this. Like, look at VCU, the number 10 strength of schedule in the nation. Those are things that will help that team if they can.
Yeah, and their net hovering around 46. You got to figure that would go up if they continue to inflate their bloat out their record, and if they can pick up a few more what a horrible league. But
actually, before I move on to one other team, let's take a quick look at the upcoming schedule here. Not that it really matters in the A-10, but
the storyline for this conference, and you kind of feel like you're repeating yourself when you're writing up these games every day. Those three teams need to basically win out.
I guess we got a circle of maybe VCU at Davidson is the best game of the week.
I think it is. And if they get that one on the road, I think it's going to help them.
Yeah.
Best game of the week is going to be Dayton at GW on Wednesday, because I'll be there. Come on.
Oh, there we go. Dayton at GW. Could GW win their second straight? That would be a – how long?
If they do, then we can scratch Dayton off of that list of three.
Rocco, since you have your Mac notes with you, I'm going to pull up the one other top 25 team here. Just give it a second to load. Buffalo Bulls are now 13-1 overall in the Mid-American Conference there. How about them, and how about their game coming up this week?
Awesome team. Fun to watch. I've gotten to the point where I've recorded every one of their games for the last six or seven. Just can't get enough of the Bulls. I think I still don't know if they can get through this league undefeated, if that's the next question. But I think they're clearly a tournament team, and if for any reason they got left out of the tournament, it would be a crime.
It would be, yeah.
Because I think I look at some of the other teams in the top 20 just from a caliber of basketball and how this team moves the ball. It's very unique, their style of play and the way they defend as well. And just look at all the road wins already. I mean, they've got six road wins. It's by far the most. They have the highest caliber of net wins of anybody in the country. That, of course, will get surpassed once conference gets fully ramped up. But I think they've done clearly enough, and it would take a total meltdown like of Western Kentucky proportions to blow this.
Yeah. David, there's three games I think we got circled. It's one of them is this week hosting Toledo, February 16th at Toledo, and then the game January 29th against Ball State, who just went and beat Toledo. So,
right, and don't forget about Kent State, who also kind of you know barfed over the weekend in this league. We'll get more of that on Under the Radar, but I just can't agree more than with what Rocco said. I mean, look at this profile; it is. Clearly, if you're using the paper as an indicator of how good a team is, I know that their league is weaker than the power leagues and that they're not going to get as many chances, but they're batting virtually 1,000 in the chances they did get, and it wasn't as if they didn't play anybody.
Yeah, well, you look at something like here, like non-conference strength of schedule is 60. You can always see a difference between that and their regular overall strength of schedule of 30 points. After just one conference game, and that's where their overall strength of schedule is going to take a hit way down into the, you know, the 150s or so by the end of the day, I bet.
Right, and it was infuriating in the past when a team like Middle Tennessee, who ultimately did get in but got in via the automatic bid, had the 14th strongest out-of-conference strength of schedule and was still put on the 12 line outside the bubble. We talked with David Warlock before the season. He seemed to say that he was aware of it, and that was one of the things the new metric was supposed to address. But that is a tournament team. No matter how you measure it, it is. You're an idiot if you don't think so.
Tata, where'd you have them on your last seed list?
Buffalo. I have them currently in the seventh slot. I could easily bump them up to six because they're going to keep winning and winning, I think. Mm-hmm. Even though Toledo is legit, I don't think they're going to end up as a top four seed. No, I've seen them all over the board, anywhere from 3 to 11. So it's a huge range just because nobody knows what to do with this team. They're a small conference team, but they beat my Wildcats last March. They're beating Syracuse on the road. They're beating West Virginia on the road. They're only lost to a solid Marquette team. I think they're going to hover around the 5, 6, 7 range because I think they're going to continue to win. I don't think they can get into the top four.
No, I agree with you. I just don't know that's possible to get in the top four short of going undefeated over, which they can't do here.
Yeah.
And then let me pull this down here. Let's run through each of you for any other final thoughts on the evening. And Tytel, let me start with you.
So I know we always focus on the men because that's the game we love, but I need to give a little shout out to the women as Baylor beat UConn 68-57 in basketball last Thursday. The reason this is significant is because it never, ever, ever happened. So UConn had not lost since the Final Four last March when they were 36-0 and lost by 2. Last time they lost in the regular season, you have to go back to 2014. They lost also by 2 in overtime at Stanford, and all they did was win the next 37 in a row, including the national title game. To find the last time they lost by double digits, you got to go back to 2012 when they lost to Notre Dame by 13 points somehow in stores. It really is historic. UConn does not lose, period, much less in the regular season, much less by single digits. And Baylor beat them up last Thursday.
One of these days we have to have a long conversation over whether or not that what UConn's women team does is good or not for the women's game.
Well, is it time to start heating up Geno's seat?
He lost the game, fired
Geno. Start warming that seat up.
Rocco, any other thoughts?
Yeah, well, two of my final thoughts got stolen thanks to the Kermit Davis conversation in the bottom of the Big East getting better. But we did not cover the Oregon State Beavers, who snapped a 26-year conference opening losing streak on the road. So congratulations to Wayne Tinkle. And not only just any win, they won at their arch rival Oregon in the basketball Civil War. Who, by the way, we also did mention lost Bol Bol for the season and are up against their own challenges with also Kenny Wheaton on the shelf. But Oregon State now undefeated in the Pac-12 going into week two. We've never been able to say that on this show.
Never been able to say that, I think, ever. But David, let me let you finish things out.
Okay, and I would just like to share my final thought.
Andy?
Yes. That is all.
Andy's coming up.
Okay. Well, I guess on whatever that note was, I'd want to thank everyone for joining us. I'm Chad Sherwood, John Tytel from Bracketeer.org. We had Rocco Miller, David Griggs. This has been the Hoops HD Report. We'll be back again later this week for an Under the Radar. And I think we're going to start our bracket rundown shows on Thursday.
We are. So. I believe. Yeah, we're starting the bracket rundown show on Thursday. So get pumped for that. I don't know if we've decided on a format yet, but or did we?
Well, we'll figure one out.
We'll figure
it out. We'll make it up as we go along.
We have several different formats. They're all fantastic. So,
On that note, though, have a great evening, everyone, and we'll talk to you again real soon.